Lee, I'm going to step out. Takes me.
All right, so we're gonna kick things off. Our board chair, Josh Brown, is on the road today, so he's calling in. So he's on the phone. And I am the vice chair, Claire Reeves. So I'm going to be leading the interview and asking questions. And then we were going to open it up to any other board member who might have a question that isn't covered through our standard conversation.
Sure.
So at first I wanted to start off by kind of reiterating what's in the RFQ, because I think it accurately captures what we're looking for. So I'm just going to go ahead and read some of the relevant pieces. So the board is seeking independent legal counsel that represents the board as a governing body, distinct from legal services that may be provided to the school system and administration or superintendent. The intent of this solicitation is to ensure the board has access to objective, conflict-free legal advice in fulfilling its statutory and fiduciary responsibilities. The board recognizes that its role differs from that of the school district administration and requires legal guidance that is focused specifically on the board's duties as an elected policy-making body. We're specifically seeking counsel that will routinely advise the board on matters involving its authority, responsibilities, policy, including policy review and development, and procedures under Tennessee law. We are looking for an attorney that's going to attend all of our monthly meetings, our policy meeting, our work session, and our school board meetings, offering real-time legal advice to ensure compliance with applicable laws governing public meetings and decision-making processes. In addition, counsel will assist the board in addressing legal questions related to ethics, conflicts of interest, and transparency requirements under state law. The attorney will also advise the board chair and executive committee from time to time on matters of school governance. The engagement also anticipates that counsel will provide guidance on matters involving the board's relationship with the superintendent, including contractual matters, evaluation processes, and other supervisory responsibilities. Because I'm sure, as you're aware, we are going to be conducting a superintendent search this
year.
Yes,
I saw that.
All right. And then, in addition to these ongoing advisory services, the selected attorney may be asked to develop or review policies, provide legal training to board members, and assist in mitigating legal risks associated with board actions. So, do you have any questions about any of that?
I had read that when I did my RFQ response, so hopefully I've tried to address that. Yes.
Okay, so, you know, as you know, I touched on, this is a very big year for us as a board. We're heading into a superintendent search. At the same time, we have a new district general counsel. We're hiring a new board attorney. And then after this election in August, we're going to have potentially half the board as new members.
Okay.
So it's a lot to navigate. And I guess I wanted to see what makes you want to represent the board, knowing that we have all of this change to navigate.
Well, it won't be boring. Well, I think it's an exciting opportunity for the board. I went ahead and went online and looked at some of your past board meetings, and I also watched the interim superintendent's state of the board that you did. So it sounds like an exciting year all around for the school and for the board members, but it's a lot to navigate. Also, you're not going to be stuck in the same old patterns, possibly, and I think that's an opportunity, but also a challenge. Change is a challenge. And change management is something that I've done a lot, both when I was in-house counsel for the Tennessee Health Management Group, that they were a client of mine and asked me to come in-house and start their human resources and compliance programs, which I did.
Okay.
And then I came back to my firm. So this is the only law firm I've ever been with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loyal like that. But I appreciate the way they do business, and it's unusual in Nashville to have a firm that size. I absolutely understood your conflicts questions. And one of the things that I've been doing is getting conflict clients lately, because so many firms in Nashville are very large and very adverse to finding conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it that way. Because it can be, you're trusting the firm to say, well, I have this client over here, but I don't really do anything for them. My partner does, so I can deal with this. I'm dealing with one of those now in a large federal suit, and mm-hmm. I'm disturbed by the complex. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing I bring to the table. That we're not a large firm. We have 12 attorneys mm-hmm. now, but we've always been about that size. We've never merged. We all learned from the same attorneys 85 years ago, and when I started, named partners were still at the firm, Cornelius and Collins. Well, they're both deceased now, but we learned that way, and that's how we grew the firm. And the one thing I will say is the ethical standards are very high, and so I was very interested when you said independent and you didn't want any conflicts. And I think one of the things I can bring is I don't vote here. I don't live here. I won't campaign for anyone here. I won't have that conflict. But I do live in Rutherford County, so mm-hmm. it's not that far. And then I work in Nashville. You'll see the school systems that I've worked with are Nashville, Clarksville, Mount Julia. Mm-hmm. They're around the area.
Yes. So speaking of some of the school systems that you've worked with, mm-hmm. You've worked for those school systems more in an advisory role for the administration. Is that correct?
No, okay. a little bit, because anytime you have a large federal suit, mostly what I've done is federal okay. suits for them in the area of special education. Mm-hmm. Mostly now I have done some policy work after those suits because they've said, look, our risk was too high. Okay. We weren't ready to handle that.
Okay.
And so we will come in and we'll look at due process policies and things like that. So I've done that, but my foot in the door has always been litigation.
So you have had meetings with school board members
yes.
where you have been communicating directly with school board members and advising
yes.
them, and it sounds like even on policy.
It has
matters.
Been, yes, but the policy matters have been open meeting. The litigation mm-hmm. has been, of course, not subject mm-hmm. to the open meeting.
Got it.
And large and small school boards.
Okay. So, and in the course of those conversations mm-hmm. with boards about policy matters, was there ever a time where, say, maybe the opinion of the board differed from, say, the superintendent or the administration or even the general counsel? And if so, how did you navigate that?
Well, the answer is yes. I think that's pretty frequent. If you're going to have a frank exchange of views, you're going to have people, and, you know, disagreement, different points of view, yes. Mm-hmm. I handle it the same way I handle my clients. I want to know what you're trying to get to. What is the question? And most of my discussions in presenting before boards is asking them questions. Mm-hmm. What do you see are the problems? What are you trying to get at? And then I give a legal response. I mean, I'm not your policymaker. And so I try to give pros and cons. But here is the black letter of the law. Now, if the black letter of the law were always the black letter of the law, you wouldn't need lawyers.
Right.
So it's rarely ever that. Mm-hmm. But that's how I approach it. So I ask more questions, probably, than I get asked.
Okay. Does anybody have any input at this point? Lee, do you have any input?
I can turn.
Okay. Okay. You know, your submission mentioned that your firm doesn't anticipate needing anyone but you to represent this board. And so, again, given how much we're going to be tackling, you know, I guess I'm curious if there's something urgent comes up, if there's a special called meeting that you have a conflict with, or, you know, will you be available to take a late night policy question from a board member if that comes up? What do you anticipate, given all of your various commitments, mm-hmm. being to have the time to adequately give this particular board?
Yes, and so one of the things I did before I answered your FAQ was print out your board meetings and look at them and look at your agenda mm-hmm. And what's coming up. The answer is yes, or I would not have submitted. Do I have individuals in my firm who could assist if it were an absolute emergency and I were out of the country, which hasn't happened in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. And I have a team of 3 that have worked with me on education law and employment law, which is a combination of what this is,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
Yes.
And so I have backup, but we didn't anticipate that we would need it because I'm readily available and I don't have a lot of outside commitments outside of the workday, even.
Okay. on the off chance that we did need to have somebody, you couldn't make it, would they be billed at the same rate or how?
All of that, in my opinion, is negotiable. Okay. The firms, I mean, you said you wanted to discuss that after you had an interview. And so I gave you a range of my rates so you would know.
Yeah.
But no, I think you bill based upon expertise.
Okay. So just touching one more time, you would be the person, you plan to attend all three of our monthly meetings.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. So let me see here. And we covered that. Where do you, I mean, we've touched on this briefly, but I think we want to circle back to it. Where do you draw the line between telling us what the law actually requires and telling us what you personally think is good policy?
I think my personal opinion of good policy isn't that relevant to you. I think my experience and what has happened, depending on how a policy is written, or, you know, I can see this being Exhibit A in the lawsuit, I wouldn't say that. But it's very practical. I have represented both sides of most issues over the years. Some that I would have agreed with, some that I would have thought no, that some that I recommended against, but it was the way it needed to be written at the time, and so we just mitigate risks.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
About mitigating risks?
Well,
So there are employers who like to do things exactly on the letter of the law. I'm trying to think of an example that won't out someone. Or, for example, I've also represented a lot of health care in that area. And sometimes there are billing questions that maybe don't fit the goal or the finances right then. And I say, well, I would do it this way, but if you're not going to do it this way immediately, I would mark down exactly when you made that decision. I would document why you made that decision. And here are your risks. You're going to get an audit, possibly. You're going to have to pay back, possibly. But if this is what you want to do, this is the best way I would write what you're going to do, and this is how I would document the fact that you had a conversation and that there was some thought that went into why you did what you did. Mm-hmm. That would be my best example right now. But, I mean, I've got many employers that don't necessarily take the best route. I sometimes say you need to do an I-9 audit. They say I-9s are very easy to fill out, and I say, all right, have you done this, no, all right, you need an I-9 audit, but what's that going to cost me? Well, here's what a fine costs you, but,
right,
you know, we can do it in parts, we can, that, but, you know, it's that kind of thing. No, we're not going to drug test before we bring someone on. Mm-hmm. Okay, here are your risks, here's what you need to have your insurance coverage cover, that kind of thing, because I don't run the business, and I can give my opinion, I can say the risks, but or I can fire the client.
That's true. Okay.
There are those options, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, thank you
for
walking us through that. So you disclosed some prior work for the TEA back in the 80s and 90s.
Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. And some tort reform legislative work for Tennessee Health Management.
Yes.
Do either of those or anything else in your background raise any concerns for a board whose own teachers and staff might be represented by the TEA?
No, I haven't done TEA work. And I met someone coming in the door who's, I guess, your TEA representative. Mm-hmm. She was coming, so I talked to her for a minute. The work I did with the TEA was pre-Comprehensive Education Reform Act. And he said, I don't think I've touched the TEA since the year 2000, but I am familiar with the tenure rules and the due process, and I've also read your board policies on that as well. So, but I can't think that any of that would have any impact at all.
Right. So sometimes boards drift from governance into management without quite, you know, realizing it. Can you give us a concrete example of a time maybe when you had to redirect a board or a board member back into their lane?
Sure. I was on a nonprofit board, but I was the attorney on the board. And those of you who have been on nonprofit boards, which is probably everybody in here, know that people are passionate about the nonprofit. Mm-hmm. and want to very much direct personnel decisions, grant decisions, in a way that meets what they believe is the their mission of the board, whether it's the actual mission of the board or not.
Right.
And so those have been direct and difficult conversations, to the extent where I've even recommended that they change the policies that they have about who handles personnel and who doesn't, mm-hmm. the executive director or the superintendent, like that, or should the board mm-hmm. be, you know, that nitpicky and that insistent on discussing personnel write-ups, well, because that person called the board member because they have a special relationship. And I think nonprofits aren't unique in that, but to my mind, they're the most passionate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a chain of communication that we try to follow and that we all are aware of, where, you know, especially with personnel issues, they go through their principal first and then on up the chain of command.
Yeah, I read that in your policies. Yeah. There were very many steps to get.
Yeah, before coming to board member.
I saw that.
So, but then also sometimes policy proposal can blur that line as well,
sure.
Right? So in that situation where there's board policy, but maybe it touches on administrative regulation, like mm-hmm. how do you handle that?
I'm struggling to think of an example. Do you have an example?
I'm trying to think of an example. I feel like there's times where we've may have drifted.
Oh, I mean, drift is inevitable.
Yeah,
say the question again.
A policy proposal that blurs the lines and touches on administrative regulation.
I mean, one example I might throw out there is just when we've actually put consequences in our policy.
Yes.
I feel like that should be more up to administration based on, like, it was offenses, like first offense this, second offense this. I don't think that should be in policy. I think we overstepped our bounds in that. But,
well, I'd like to hear what are your thoughts.
I don't know. I think the policy should be high level, and they get to
and procedures. That's the difference between policies and procedures, mm-hmm. in my opinion. So you've got, you know, the statutes on the books, and then you've got the rules and regulations of the state of Tennessee, which is where the rubber meets the road, I think. And so, I mean, I would point those out. Certainly, mm-hmm. but it's ultimately the board's decision.
It's ultimately the board's decision.
Yeah.
Okay. Dennis, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I want to hear from the superintendent, because would there be a time when our attorney would be talking with the district's attorney, who would be talking with Lisa Karstens, because it's all legal, and the superintendent, who handles the administrative side of it? I was just kind of throw that out there. Has anybody thought about that?
Simple question, right?
Well, it's. I don't think it's any different than many times I have, especially federal cases, where you've got many represented parties as defendants. They may have a joint defense, but they're all being represented, and their interests are being represented by an individual attorney. And I think that's something attorneys should deal with.
Well, I'm assuming that the chair, going forward, with the superintendent as the executive committee, could work that out.
About who's in attendance?
The lawyers.
Sure.
The three lawyers that we work with, somebody kind of give you your marching orders, because it could touch on something for the district with, hi Seth. It could touch with Lisa, who's standing before the judge,
yes.
and talking to you, who's mm-hmm. giving your advice.
Well, I would only give advice to those two if they ask for it, because that's not who I'm hired to represent.
Well, I know, but I'm saying the executive committee could expand that to make sure that all three lawyers.
Well, just like when we've had attorney-client privileged meetings, Bobby Cook was typically there.
Yep, and
but,
he's not going to be there.
But Lisa was leading those meetings. I would anticipate it would be a similar arrangement. I mean, Bobby didn't really offer his opinion unless he was asked. So, All right, well then, I'm sure you have experience with Robert's Rules, but we just wanted to touch on that.
Yeah, I do. I won't say that I wouldn't have to brush up on it if anything got down in the weeds. But yes, I've run meetings before subject to Robert's Rules. But it seemed to me as if you all had a very nice system of the when the agenda comes out and how you can bring motions and what is appropriate and what is not, what's tabled. And I will admit, I watched a couple of board meetings before I came here, so I thought they were very well run. It didn't look like a lot of intervention was needed, at least at that point.
There can be lots of procedural issues, and so I guess, have you ever had to navigate procedural issue in an open meeting?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
And most of the meetings are open.
Okay, yeah. It can come up, and so we just want to make sure.
I will have my tabbed and highlighted.
Okay.
I can't say that I can put off the top of my head. I wouldn't say that I know exactly.
Yeah.
Every drill down.
And then.
Which edition we're talking about?
I would be worried.
I never try to say I know. I was always like, give me a minute to look that up, and then I will be back with you.
Yeah. And then, of course, I know you're familiar with the Tennessee Open Meetings Act.
Yes.
I personally feel like we have a very strict interpretation of that. So I wanted to hear, could you speak to us about your interpretation of the Open Meetings Act?
So I think for a school board, it goes with quorum and whether or not deliberations are occurring. If it's informational or if it's training or if it is asking questions of an attorney outside of deliberations, then yes. The one thing that I'm always sensitive to when I have done that is you do not start deliberating in front of me, because I'm going to tell you that's a violation.
Yeah.
But and also, two or three people. So I have tried cases where the ultra-vires action outside of an open meetings, especially early on in the Education Act, were very prominent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it used to be much less observed by boards than it is now, and I think that's a good thing. It used to be, we're just talking. We just met at the coffee house, and it was okay. But all of a sudden, you come, and there's a vote immediately before there's any discussion, and you know something has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
The deliberative process is sort of where I draw the line. Mm-hmm. If you're going to deliberate on something that you have to have a quorum to vote on, then I think that's clearly within the Open Meetings Act.
Okay. We've gone back and forth on board retreats, and you said informational.
Yes.
And so I would think that if we wanted to have a board retreat where we're not talking about deliberating on votes, we would be able to do that.
I think that falls under training as well. I would think.
Okay.
All right. I'd have to see an agenda.
Yeah.
Lawyer
that's a good. That's
there.
A good. Good answer. Good answer. Okay. So back to policy and review and development with the boards that you currently work with.
Yes.
Just walk us through what that looks like for those boards and how it works.
Well, usually they have policies and they're asking for a review. That's where I come in. I don't know that I've ever, from the ground up, written a whole policy book for a board. And I saw that you have your annual or biannual review of your policies, which I think is what's coming up for you, right? There are a lot of them. So I look at them, and then I need to know, based upon what the board is trying to accomplish this year, or what are your pressure points, or where have you had issues, and is there something with the policy, the way it's written, that's either illegal, or the law has changed, or there is case law that just came down, and I think, because I do review the case law frequently, I think that a better wording might be this, because this is what this judge has said, and this is what you if you run a risk, you want to be as tight on your risk as you can be.
Mm-hmm.
But, within those parameters, there are ways of wording things that I think are unique to the particular board and the jurisdiction you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's.
And you're familiar with TSBA model policies and.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. And you read them, when there's new, we have a whole bunch of new laws.
On charter
and
schools, yes.
All right. Jay, do you want to walk her through our process for policy?
Sure. Yeah, I think, outside of just the standard review, I think we've we did a full like review over about a 2-year process where it was like deep dive, rewrite, compare it to the TSBA. I don't know that I think our in-house counsel would review the full book every 2 years, but not all would necessarily come before the policy committee. Only those that were deemed to be.
So you don't reaffirm either?
We don't reaffirm. Only the ones that are in the annual agenda do we reaffirm. Like there's some like the ethics and a couple others that we have to look at like annually. But we have a we started the last couple of years with policy review. It's like a cover sheet, kind of where the board member or the staff member who is looking to propose either a new policy or a policy revision to kind of state the purpose of the revision, plus you know a little summary, whatever, as a cover sheet to that doesn't actually go into policy. It's just used to for anybody looking instead of just looking at the red line, like sure. Okay, what are they trying to do?
Right.
So that's been I like that. Yeah. I think it's been well received from the board and from staff because we have I don't think it was because of that. I think it was because we had quite a few new board members. I think as of September 1, you know, Dan and I will be gone. Josh will be gone. And so, over the last, in 6 years, 8 years, we will have turned over like all but one or two board seats. And so, like, it's good. And we'll have a new superintendent, a new board attorney, a new in-house attorney. And so anything that we can do to kind of focus and make sure. I think we've had more board initiated policy revisions, and not all of them have passed, but it's opened up it's found a forum to be able to do that. So mm-hmm. I think that's probably unique. I don't know that.
So I will also say that I read your policies before I came here and saw the effective dates and the revision dates on them, and thought you had been doing a whole lot of work on that. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great preamble for people when you're going to discuss a policy change. Here is what I've proposed, and here's why or where the need is. Because otherwise, out of context, some policies, like you know, the McDonald's temperature of coffee after someone spilled it on their lap, seem odd. Right? Why do we have this? You know, why is this in the tort law? I think that informs the discussion. It's like what I said when I talk to a board or to advise a board, I'm asking as many questions myself to find out what is the issue, what are the two sides of the issue, and what is the law, and how does that all dovetail. But the language is the policy.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm. Yes, we've debated many hours over
sure.
shall versus mm-hmm. will. Or
I can help you with that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, and the last few questions I have really do, I guess, are more related to a contract or that negotiation. And I guess I wanted to hear, you know, kind of understanding what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking on an hourly rate versus a retainer mm-hmm. or something in between? Like, what do you think is appropriate?
Well, I will say I didn't know if this position was going to differ a lot from the person who held this position previously. So I don't know, coming into a new position, how many hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the depth of the time required.
Mm-hmm.
So although I am very much open to a retainer, a monthly retainer, or a rate that would help your budget, I would suggest anytime I've negotiated a flat fee that there is a roundup at the end of the contract where I say, all right, everybody needs to be fairly compensated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that would be my position.
Okay.
But I would have to know more
sure.
or have a better understanding of exactly what's required.
Great.
Because,
yeah, we are, it is, just in
yes.
one, it is a slightly, we are looking for more from our board attorney. Mm-hmm. Our prior attorney was predominantly a parliamentarian at our board meetings. He attended our work sessions, but he was predominantly a parliamentarian. And we were getting all of our policy guidance from the district's general counsel.
Sure.
So.
I would think that we could look at last year's meetings, how long the policy committees were, how long the work sessions were, although some of them were crazy. And the public said we could come up with a number of hours
mm-hmm.
on
yeah.
average for the 10 months.
Well, that's just the meetings. I think, I mean, I'd love to get Lee's perspective
yes.
on this, because she's closer to all the workings between our board attorney. So now we've got Seth, who's our new board attorney. And as Lee pointed out to me the other day, we've gone from three attorneys to a wild zero, and now we at least have Seth, because our chief human resources officer was an attorney as well.
Yes.
And so between Jason being, you know, general counsel, and Dana and Vicky, now we go down to like, I mean, I'm sure Seth had a line out of his door when he came to all the backlog, right? And so I just like give her your perspective of how the division, like how you see the division of duties.
Yeah, I could see outside of just really, to Claire's point, you know, being a member or advising during an actual meeting and supporting the meeting itself, I could see that the board would really need advisement on policy, as an example. TSBA, anytime that there is a new policy or a new expectation, state law, there are sample policies that are created. But even in Seth's short amount of time, you'll see that there are updates or finalizations, and just really the nuances that are different between the interpretation of the law, how it applies to our specific district, and within, if it's an existing policy, oftentimes there's nuances within our policy that are written specific for us that would have to be taken into consideration. So especially advising the board in that situation, being able to not only read and understand the law outside of our meetings, but really to give some concrete advice to the board as they kind of navigate, you know, staff recommendations, but then their own recommendations to see what really is the firm footing that they want to stand on. And then being able to navigate the relationship with our staff attorney, because there will be items that maybe that staff is recommending for a policy change that maybe the perspective of the board differs on. So having that time outside of the standard meeting to be able to collaborate and to understand various perspectives so that you can give sound advice to them as they're making decisions. I can see that there would be times that the board would just need advice on other various things that are taking place with their governance of the board. And I'm sure that they would set up some type of process to be able to filter questions to you. But I can see the board chair needing to reach out several times in a month's, month's time between meetings, just getting advice, generally speaking, and responding to community concerns. And then at times, vetting to ensure that the district is acting in good faith as it pertains to a particular law that has community interest. So I do think, to Dr. Drigger's point, we could get a firm amount of seat time, mm-hmm. but I do think outside of the seat time, some sound advice and interpretation of laws needed.
Yes, absolutely, and that's why I left it sort of open, because it sounds like this is maybe a new way of the board handling this position as well, and I want to be fair to everyone. I will say the reason I put in hourly rates a range is because, not to toot our own horns, but we don't have a lot of overhead in my law firm. So I am not in a high-rise tower that I have to pay $45,000 a month to keep. And so we are able to set rates that are great for us, but perhaps wouldn't be for a larger law firm. And I am willing to continue to work within those parameters. That's one of the things I do for my clients as well. It depends on how long do you think your need is going to be? Is this going to be a long-term relationship? Is this a one-time thing? What do I need to do? So I'm flexible, but I want everybody to be treated fairly. So I'm willing to give some certainty in a budget amount, and then if we find that it's flexing one way or the other, make adjustments. I'm perfectly fine with that.
Right. Well, does anybody have any questions that
were covered? Going back to what Lee was saying, you know, we sit here and we'll put a policy together, mm-hmm. and it sounds good to us, But then we hand it over to the attorney and mm-hmm. say, clean this up legally. Mm-hmm. Then there's changes, usually.
Yes.
And I think that creates a lot of time.
It does.
It does.
So,
I mean, just every client I have, that's how it works.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. And I think it's a partnership between I don't think Seth reports to you or vice versa, but I think he's probably going to be doing a lot of the drafting.
Sure.
I was like, and it's your job from my perspective to just ensure that the board's interests are taken care of.
And that's 100%. We have different clients.
Yeah. That's right.
And so that's, although we have a joint defense, we have different clients. So
I would like to, well, first of all, have you had any experience in hiring a superintendent?
Not a superintendent,
okay.
No.
Obviously, but on your boards, like.
But certainly new higher CEO level, or? And I was involved in hiring the CEO for the company that I went with in-house. So,
okay.
Yeah, I've done searches and, yeah. and interview questions and hiring and vetting. Yes. Yeah,
a public search is a yeah. little is
it,
is
it's a
little
bit
different. Yeah.
So just this.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And so help me, I guess, in addition to or maybe through the special ed process. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of I understand the special ed suits and everything that mm-hmm. you're and policies that you're involved with.
Yes.
But outside of those mm-hmm. We've dealt with several First Amendment type issues between library books and things. So how do you, like, how would you rate your First Amendment skills?
So actually, I've got a reported decision on the First Amendment in a school system. It was one of the first ones. It was a coach who went on social media and said something and then got terminated. So yeah, I mean, I think First Amendment is right now. It involves every single employer that I have, whether it's social media or right now there's a prior restraint I've got in a case involving some new Tennessee laws, the FAIR Act, if you're familiar with that. And so, First Amendment is something, you know it when you see it. People say it a lot and never understand what it means, is what I've found. And so when you get people screaming First Amendment, you have to say, I'm not sure that that exactly says what you think it says. I was at the Rutherford County Board meeting when they were talking about the librarian who was recently terminated, and I had been asked some questions by some board members because they knew I did First Amendment and employment law. And so I answered those questions as best I could, but that's such a policy decision. For the board,
it's just a risk. It's advising on risks, like, because that's really what you have to do at the end of the day, right? I mean,
all I will say is Gino Bolso will sue you, and so that's
go Gino.
Yeah,
he will, and I've got a long history with Gino, but sure. So I mean, can anybody bulletproof you on First Amendment? No,
and so will the ACLU. So
that's
where we are.
Yeah, exactly. Between a rock and a hard place, mm-hmm. absolutely. Yeah, all I can say is here's how the cases have been interpreted. Mm-hmm. I certainly know the Middle District federal judges who would be in front of, and I'm very familiar with their rulings, and then the Sixth Circuit. So, yes, that comes up in almost every case I've ever tried is First Amendment.
And how different is First Amendment for a governmental agency compared to a private company?
Well, it doesn't really apply to a private company.
Right. I mean, well,
yeah. So, I mean, it's honestly, is the government restraining free speech?
Sure.
That's what it comes down to, and it's a factual argument, you know.
So, I hadn't really considered this, but would you, if there were, like the lawsuit that was brought against Williamson County Schools related to the books, would
yes.
you be representing the board in that case, or would we still outsource it?
Do you have D&O coverage that has someone that...
What is D&O coverage?
We have
directors and officers coverage.
We have D&O coverage. I don't know that that's ever been
So through Williamson County, if we have a lawsuit that is against the county itself, often there's consultation with risk management, and then the representation for Williamson County as an entity versus the Williamson County School Board. And so there's consultation and collaboration that takes place between the Williamson County schools, staff attorney, and then Lisa Carson's office represents the county.
I saw that
there's collaboration there.
And we have very similar lawsuits that we are involved in. I think, A, you might have D&O coverage for that. I don't know what your coverage is like. B, it also depends on whether the individual board members have been named. Usually they can be pulled out, but sometimes they're named for specific things. I think in that case, yes, that would be me. But I think for purposes of the board as a whole, that's a decision to be made. Yeah, with risk management and legal, yeah. I wouldn't anticipate it would be me unless it was individual board members. But certainly following along and advising the board what's going on in the suit and what are the issues and explaining it, I can certainly see that there's a role there for that.
So we have had individual board members that were named, and we did retain counsel for them that was outside of Berger Mosley,
right.
Like it was third party. Just that's been years, but it's happened.
Time.
Yeah, and I think that the main goal there is to get you out of the lawsuit.
Yeah. Do you have any other questions? No. Anyone else? No.
I do, Claire.
Okay, sure. Go ahead, Josh.
Forgot the box was locked.
Yeah, and the mic is hot.
Hi, Rebecca. This is Josh Brown.
Yes.
I think it's a commonly held view that the board and the district are one and the same, at least in the eyes of the public. But in the statute, of course, there are clear responsibilities laid out to the board and that are different from those of the superintendent. If someone asked you to describe what the differences are in terms of their legal responsibility, aside from policymaking, which is the obvious answer, how would you describe it? And then how does that play into, it touches on some of the things that have already been mentioned, but how does that play into how you engage with, on a regular basis, with the in-house attorney and with the litigation attorney, just kind of on a regular basis, given those different legal responsibilities as defined in statute?
Well, I think the board can also delegate responsibilities to the superintendent. So, I mean, that might be maybe one point. But I sort of view it as the president of the board and the chief executive officer. And they have different responsibilities, but there is an overall supervision. And the board has the overall supervision for the health, along with the superintendent, but for the health of the school system, and I think that's where the direction of the school system comes from the board, I think, and that may be a roundabout way of saying policy, but I honestly think that is the answer. You are elected to create the policies that then the superintendent and her team execute. But you also have, and especially in your policy books, you have a lot of overlapping. And so I think that's an interesting navigation. So I don't know that I can answer for this school board right now because I don't know you well enough. But I understand your question. Is that the worst answer ever? But
no.
That's sort of the most honest.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Well, if there are no other questions, I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you. I appreciate
thank
the
you
opportunity.
So much. Yeah. Yeah, very
adios, muchacho.
Cha-cha. Certainly.
All right.
Thank you,
Josh.
So much.
I'm going to hang up. Are you going to stay on for? Are we calling you back for a policy or?
I'll call back in for policy.
All right. Sounds good.
Right on the nose.
Yes, sir.